Thompson scores!
Thompson, he's just taking his game to the next level. Now, to say that he is ready, sometimes you get thrown into the fire because of injuries, but, unless there's some serious injuries going on at on the D core, I still think it's important that we continue to build his game and work on his game.
TSN 1200.
Welcome back, everybody. 9:13 here on a Wednesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer. Be joined by Belleville Senators play-by-play voice Jack Miller in just a second. That is Troy Mann, the head coach of the BSens, who was on yesterday on In the Box and had shared some thoughts on the continued development of some of the Sens' key prospects. Lassie Thompson being one of them, who looked very good in training camp here in Ottawa. And given the struggles of the defense, especially in the last game, and the coach's post-game comments, in which he didn't sound very pleased with his defense. Everybody's kind of going, get some of these young prospects up here. They can't be any worse than these guys. And there's the coach, and I think rightfully so, tempering the enthusiasm. All right, still some. If you want these guys to be at their best when they eventually get to Ottawa, they still have some work to do at the minor league level.
Yeah, and also important for Coach Mann with Belleville struggling to lie about him being ready or not and make sure, you know what, probably another 6 months, call me back.
I like him next year. I really like Thompson there next
probably
year.
Probably a year away.
All right, Belleville's off to a 1-3 start. They lost a pair of home games on the weekend. They got a Wednesday night game versus the Rochester Americans coming up tonight, a game we'll have for you. It's our first broadcast of the year here on TSN 1200, and we'll enjoy the play-by-play stylings of a man we haven't talked to in a very long time, the play-by-play voice of the Belleville Senators, Jack Miller. How are you doing this morning, Jack?
Hi, I'm good, JR. Good to hear your voice.
And good to talk to you. Jack, say hi to Simmer, because he's missed you too, Jack.
Hi, Simmer.
I had my beehive honey syrup that you were pushing in the 80s. gets me through my 4 hours.
Okay, first, some bad news for you guys. Seeing as you're talking about Lassie Thompson out with an ankle injury. Day-to-day, not considered serious. He did play on Saturday night against Cleveland. Won't be in the lineup tonight against Rochester.
Yes, and I understand we had the coach on yesterday that Mads Søgaard also tweaked something, so he won't play tonight. So they'll be down a couple of their best prospects. But before we get to the players, Jack, no games in Belleville at all last year. They played here in Ottawa. No fans here, and obviously no games even there. I took a quick look at the attendance at the first couple of games, or the games on the weekend. Announced at just over 1,000. How much concern, if any, is there right now in the early struggles attendance-wise down in Belleville?
Well, I think it's got to be a concern no matter how you cut it. But there are some things. I mean, October is not normally a great month, not just here, but across, I think, the American Hockey League in terms of getting fans back. I remember you and I had a conversation some time back about having to rebuild things in Belleville, and after things were quiet all of last year, obviously, BSens were playing out of Ottawa, and there was virtually no organization here. There were a couple of part-time people, and they really haven't replaced anybody until recently. And so they didn't have a group salesperson, for instance, until a week ago. The season had already begun. I think they finally got their front office up to the level of staffing they had pre-pandemic. But a lot of these people are coming in. They're fairly new to the jobs. They're not hitting the ground running. They've got some learning to do. And the feeling is once that happens, then hopefully the attendance will improve as it goes, because you'll have people selling tickets. You'll have people in group sales. But right now, still, that was an eye-opener last weekend, 1,000 one night and about 1,200 the next night. And so that's got to improve, no question.
Jack, early on, how does the on-ice product look? Certainly already been some injuries here, and only takes a couple of guys to be called up or not be in Belleville, and that can sway the product.
It sure can, and especially this year, it was expected that Belleville might get off to a better start than it did a year ago when there were so many guys just breaking in, like Jarvinty came late in the season, Sokolov, took him a while to get going. Players like that, Parker Kelly now back and will be in the lineup tonight, Cole Reinhart last year, just cutting his teeth, and they had to learn the Ottawa Senators way, the Troy Mann way, and once they did, they were a very good hockey team, and these guys are back, and it was expected that Belleville might get off to a better start. Now, Parker Kelly got called up after he had scored a couple of goals, and so that took something away, but there's a lot of guys in the lineup that at this stage in the game just have not got their offensive game going. And whether or not, I mean, you can look at some guys that are in Ottawa right now, but still, there are veterans. Sokolov has yet to get a point this season, and let's face it, I think because of what he did last year, he was the rookie of the year in the Canadian division, 15 goals, 10 assists, not bad in an abbreviated season in your first year of pro, that I guess the expectations were somewhat high. But I was looking at his numbers from a year ago. It took him 5 games before he scored his first goal last season. Tonight will be his 5th game. We'll see if that's the one that breaks the ice. But Troy Mann made, obviously, a comment that really underlines most of it. And that is, this year, this is the real American Hockey League. Last year, it was a different animal because of the taxi squads, and a lot of players who would normally play in the A were on these taxi squads and back and forth between the NHL teams, taxi squads. Some would be back and forth in the American Hockey League. But now you've got that much more depth in every lineup. So it's almost like a Igor Sokolov having to realize, hey, the level of play is that much better this year than it might have been last. Plus, they know he's coming. And so he's got some adapting to do. If there was some good news, I thought, late in the game against Cleveland on Saturday, he was using that big 6'5" frame and starting to get to the net. It was like an awakening in that respect. And if that's the case, and if that's the start of something, then hopefully he'll start coming along. But a lot of other guys just have not scored. And that has been the problem. When you only score 8 goals in 4 games, you're probably not going to win a lot of them, especially when 5 came in 1 game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jack, how has Brännström looked?
I thought Brännström has not looked to the level that we may have expected him to. Let's face it, we expect he's going to be an offensive defenseman, and he hasn't yet. He hasn't got a point. He's getting shots. He had 9 shots on goal in the first 4 games, but he has struggled offensively, but the whole team has struggled offensively in that respect. And he was a -3 in the game against Cleveland last Friday night, and he's -5 overall. He took a stick to the face on Saturday night, lost 3 teeth, and got cut for 8 stitches. He's going to play tonight. He practiced this week, full visor on. And I'm going to be interested in seeing if this makes a change, because he's been playing the left side. And, of course, I think the organization wanted him on the left side as much as possible, even though he's a right shot. They're going to play him on the right side tonight for the first time this season, and we'll see if that makes any difference in this game.
Is that, Jack, because of injury and circumstance, or is that a plan to move him to his offside?
No, as far as a plan as such, JR, I don't know if it's something long-term or they're just trying to get him going. No injury to speak of. Belleville's fairly deep in terms of bodies on the back end. As a matter of fact, they're going with 7 defensemen tonight. They did on Saturday night as well, because they want to get Maxence Gaudet in the lineup. He had sat for the first 3 games, so going with the 7D. Did I hear clapping from Guy Boucher somewhere? Anyhow, getting him in the lineup, going with 7D and 11 forwards. So, no, I don't see an issue in that respect. As far as injuries are concerned, they seem to be relatively healthy there.
Jack, thoughts on Mandalese? We talk about all the goaltenders all the time, but we really never seem to address him.
Yeah, well, it's funny because last year, of course, Philip Gustafson was up and back. Mandalese was here through the year, but got into, I think, 9 games out of the ball, and then Matt Sogard came down or came over from Denmark at the end of the year and goes 7-0. And I think lost in all of that has been Kevin Mandalese. He came on in relief in the first game in Laval. Looked okay, played 1 period. Then he got the whole game against Cleveland on Saturday night. Belleville lost the game 2-1, but both goals he gave up, they were good goals, and I thought he made some outstanding saves along the way. So now with Gustafson back in Ottawa and Sogard out probably through the weekend before we hit the road next week, Mandalese is certainly going to get at least 2 of 3 games over the next few days. So that'll be a great opportunity for him to show what he can do. And bottom line is, we're looking forward to seeing him get some consistent minutes in goal. He'll be backed up by Tyler Parks, who was just called up from the Atlanta Gladiators of the ECHL.
with Jack Miller, play-by-play voice of the Belleville Senators. You know, you would have seen through TV and I guess listening to our simulcast last year, a bunch of the prospects, including a couple that came over late in the year. But you're seeing it right in front of you is a totally different circumstance. What are your thoughts on Roope Järventi, the American Hockey League rookie? He's from Finland, of course, came across late last year. But early days, but what are your thoughts on that power forward and what you've seen of him?
Yeah, and you're right, JR. When he came over at the end of last year, he played four games and had, I think it was 3 points, so he made an immediate impact. But he, too, is finding that the American Hockey League's a little different this year from last. What we have to remember about him is he's still a teenager, and he could still be playing junior hockey. And bottom line is that it's a big jump, no matter how you cut it. And I think he has kind of looked that way more so at the beginning of this season. The other aspect of it is, because of injuries and call-ups, the forward ranks have been pretty much jumbled up from game one. There has not been really any consistency throughout the lines whatsoever. So I think there's a familiarity aspect of it all that he is getting used to. And I know tonight he's going to be playing in a line with Philip Daou and Jake Lucchini. And I'll tell you guys, Philip Daou is another guy who played last year for the Moncton Wildcats. It's a great story. He was never drafted in the OHL, even though he's from Barrie. Lots of skill, speed. You could tell he's got the hockey IQ. And maybe that will blend in very nicely with what Järventi brings to the lineup as well, because they're both young. As a matter of fact, Daou hasn't turned 20 yet either. He will next week. And so we're still trying to find that chemistry between lines, and Järventi is one of those players that is still familiarizing himself, not only with the league, but also with his own team.
I'm looking at your scoring, Jack, and everybody at the bottom is supposed to be the process we're talking about. Nobody has any points. thoughts on Bernhard Docker early on?
Bernhard Docker, the fact that I haven't had to talk about him a lot is a good thing because of the way he plays. And if there's been one constant throughout, Bernhard Docker has been playing with Jonathan Aspero as his defensive pairing. And you can tell Aspero's a guy that can carry it offensively, and Bernhard Docker reads off that very well. He doesn't make many mistakes. He's adjusting to the speed of it all, and he's adjusted very quickly, but a good shutdown defensive kind of a defenseman. And again, he's not trying to get outside of what he brings to the table. He knows what he's got to do in order to, you know, make the jump. So I see Bernhard Docker developing very well.
Jack, you've been doing play-by-play for a long, long time. You didn't do any last year, well, at least not at the American Hockey League level.
No level.
Yeah, okay. So is it like riding a horse? Like, did you jump in for game one this year and it's like, okay, I got this? Or is there a little warm-up period even for a guy like Jack Miller?
Oh, no, definitely. Yeah, there was some rust that had to be knocked off, and I think maybe by the middle of January, I'll be ready to go.
Okay. We'll be listening tonight anyway, Jack, even if it's just a 90% Jack Miller. Looking forward to having the call and hearing the game tonight. You'll have it at 7 o'clock with the Rochester Americans and the BSens. Always appreciate the time, Jack, and look forward to chatting with you again down the road.
All the best, guys. Thanks for this.
All right. There's Jack Miller. And again, you'll hear him tonight. We'll have the BSens game for you here on TSN 1200.
I got to admit, JR, I've never heard somebody say that, just like riding a horse.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bike.
It all depends how old you are.
I find a horse really tough to ride.
it makes sense, though. Once you're comfortable and you got on the horse, like, you're good to go, right?
I think
maybe
so.
Maybe that's where the term get off your high horse has come from.
And Jack, it's so funny. A buddy of mine, Tony Joseph, who's down a cop down in Cornwall in Oshawa, he used to mimic Jack Miller, who would do these commercials for the OHL Game of the Week. And there's this beehive thing.
Beehive honey?
Yeah, beehive honey. Uh-huh. We just thought it was the funniest thing in the world when Tony would break out. And just thinking, and Jack, I mean, I'm assuming he started when they first came into the league in, what, 82? 83?
Yeah, probably.
We're talking 40 years. We're talking Darren Pang.
Yep.
Pretty cool. He's been an icon there. And boy, that's, shame that the old Belleville Bulls are gone. Eh? You just look at that city and think, I know
that
how
should be a junior hockey city.
Big not time. No, it's tough, Jerry. Like, you don't have the rivalries. And, you know, Cornwall tried a little bit with the American League, but Boy, you had Kingston, you had Belleville, you had Peterborough, you had Cornwall, Ottawa. It was just such a great tour and such great rivalries back in the day.
Keen to see how the, and as Jack said, it's early. You ran American Hockey League teams in your day as well. It's a tough business at the best of times. As he said, usually in the fall, it's hard to get fans out. It's just such a, and this is where the pandemic comes in again, right? They had a couple of, you know, a couple of playoffs that were, there wasn't a real playoff last year when they played in the Canadian division. But you think about that team 2 years ago that had, you know, had Drake Batherson and Josh Norris and was poised to maybe go on a long run, and how getting fans out to playoff games and that whole, you know, because they're looking to get a foothold in that city. And such a missed opportunity, and then a year with no games, and now they're starting out again, and we'll see if the team is as good this year eventually as it was then. But that what could have been a long playoff run really might have done a whole lot of good for the business there, because it's tough. There's a lot of Toronto fans in Belleville, and there's a lot of Montreal fans. And you got to make them to go and watch Ottawa Senator prospects. It's tough.
Well, and the other part, JR, what you do with a playoff is you tuck the money away, because the American League is such a different animal. It's not necessarily a carryover to the next year. And I'll be honest with you, and I said this about the NHL, but even more in the American League, we sold almost all of our tickets in the summertime, JR. We sold all the groups. We built it all up. That person that comes on a Saturday night to the Belleville Senators game with a family, they don't have a clue where you are in the standings, nor do they care. Do you know what I mean? It's there for a night out with the family. It's such a different animal. And if you haven't worked on that at all summer, to count on maybe winning or maybe getting people excited to do it, oh, man, it's tough. And like I say, you basically are working one by one. It's calling somebody and saying, hey, can I get you out to a game? Then you call the next person. Hey, it's really, really tough.
All right, BSENs and Amerks for you tonight here on TSN 1200. We'll have a game again on Saturday when they take on the Marlies. All right, 9:29, we'll take a break. Still more to come. We're going to talk about World Series Game 1. More of your reaction as well to the Blackhawks story. That's the biggest story of the morning as we continue along here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
It's not to cast aspersions on anyone, but seen this guy around, not sure what he's up to. Sammer, you would know Mike Ricci, obviously very well. Most hockey fans would have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike Ricci, widely acknowledged and maybe not have been the best looking guy to play hockey, right? I think if we're being fair.
Yeah, ugly to the point, though, where he's good looking and he had a real nice flow.
He's 50 today. He's the big 5-0. Mike Ricci turns 50 today.
Yeah, one of my favorite scouting stories back in the day. Gentleman was in a hotel, and he's looking over the window, and all of a sudden he sees his long, beautiful flow, and person takes their shirt off with the back, and thinking, holy moly, what's going on here?
Oh, dear.
Turns around, Mike Ricci.
Are these stories you should be sharing?
Images are not as they appear.
I don't know. There's nothing bad. It piqued his interest. Yeah.
Now, the last I saw Mike Ricci, I thought he was assistant coaching the Sharks. Now, this would be a few years ago, I think.
He and Brian Marchman were in player development. Hadn't been involved, and I'm not sure. Now, would certainly go back to, and I think my final year in Oshawa might have been in Peterborough, but he certainly elevated quickly, right? And you want to talk about the all-Canadian player, right? He was pretty hyped up and pretty loved, for his leadership and his gritty play. And would you use the term a bit overrated, maybe? Although I shouldn't say that. He put up huge numbers in Peterborough.
He was a good player. But probably, I mean, he's a super high draft pick, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Never probably quite lived up to that. Anyway,
fourth overall by Quebec?
Yeah, I want to say that for sure. Speaking of birthdays today, Sergei Samsonov, 43 years old, kind of disappeared, right? Some great years with the Bruins and just kind of went away.
Yeah, I think for Sergei Samsonov, JR, and that was the year they had two picks, right? He and Joe Thornton.
Mm-hmm.
Sergei had played that year for the Detroit Vipers and Rick Dudley, right, as an underage player. If there is no doubt, if he came into the NHL today, he'd be a superstar. Like, he was a smaller guy.
I'll finish your story.
Okay. No, I just
follow up on Mike Ricci.
I'm just saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's all I've got.
Okay. Sorry.
And Mike Ricci was part. He was drafted by Philly. He was part of the Lindros trade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
So why?
Someone has texted me with knowledge of Mike Ricci. I'll just read the text. Okay. I'm not sure if this person would want to be attached to it, so I'll just read it. I ran into. He's still working for the Sharks. I ran into him in the elevator the other day at the rink because the Sharks were in town, right? A couple of weeks ago. He still looks disheveled and homeless. The suit he bought might have been from his draft year.
I don't know how he looked there, but I don't mind the guy like during your career not having your teeth in. But I think when you retire, JR, and you start working, that you should probably
just slip them in there.
Well, you should get them permanent. Like they don't. Most guys don't want to do it till the end of their career. They get knocked out again. And
yeah.
I can only think too. And I'm going back to the preseason. Who was it in Ottawa that ended up? Was it Norris or who cross checked a guy in the face and he got a bunch of stitches? Was it Dubois? Right?
At the end of the preseason?
Yeah,
here?
Remember Dubois got who got suspended on Ottawa? Was it Norris where he cross-checked him in the face? And you were like, wow, I could only imagine for Branstrom going down. Mm. And you're already in a bad mood.
Yeah, now you lost three
triplets. Yeah, and that night Dubois did that. He was like, you got to be kidding me. This is preseason when he got cross-checked. Anyway.
Leon Draisaitl, 26 years old today.
Wow. How do you, any forecast on how the Germans are going to look come Olympic time?
Well, I'd have to go through it. They have some interest, you know, they get some, well, Stutzla, obviously, yeah. Right? He's got to be on their Olympic team.
Not much depth. We were going to have Grubauer and Greif.
Yes, and Moritz Seider.
Right?
Seider. The red. Yeah. So they're going to have some good young players, right? Yeah, all those players that, Seider didn't play with Stutzla at last year's World Juniors. He could have, but was playing pro in Sweden and didn't. Yeah. So they kind of have a really good young group, and then there's kind of a Draisaitl, and there's a few others. Yeah. Just not the deep depth, but, it'll be one of those teams, I bet you, they'll be a tough out.
Yeah, I would think. I also wonder if this will continue, JR, because everybody said mid-90s when Marco Sturm and Jochen Heck came along, it's all of a sudden like the Germans are building up their program, and then it just pretty much went dormant. And, hey, they certainly so far have produced some world-class and pretty cool on Draisaitl, one of, if not the best player in the game.
Ridly Greig is who you're looking for on the player that ended up getting suspended, right? Got suspended
for a preseason game
and then for his first NHL game, whenever that'll be.
And that's what I was thinking. I'm thinking, I think the fella got suspended for the first game, but I can't remember anybody missing.
Right.
But, of course, he ended up going back to junior, and he'll do that. But I just remember, like for Dubois, you don't want it to happen anytime, JR, but when it's a kid out of junior, you're like, you've got to be kidding. You just did that to me.
Yeah. Rasmus Ristolainen, of course, who is now with the Flyers, is 27 today. Brandon Saad, who he's still in Colorado. St. Louis. I think he went to St. Louis, right? He was in Colorado and signed in St. Louis. Yeah, he was because he is in COVID right now, COVID protocol, Ryan O'Reilly. Yeah. For those of you who play fantasy hockey, Ryan O'Reilly missed the next four games, tested positive for COVID.
And I'm thinking back to, was Saad flipped to Columbus and then brought back in the Panarin trade?
Yes, it was him for Panarin. Yeah. Didn't work out so well. No. Did not. This day in sports history, mentioned Denny Potvin got his first NHL goal on this day. On this day in 2004, the Red Sox finally sealed the deal and won their first World Series since 2018. Of course, 1918, everybody remembers the big comeback versus the Yankees from 3-0 down to win it, and then they sealed the deal. And I just asked this question last week. I've forgotten the answer. Was it Colorado or St. Louis they beat?
St. Louis, they swept
St.
that first
Louis,
year.
And of course, the controversy that I remember was the throw to first base for the final out, and Doug Minkiewicz, nice job by me, takes the ball, puts it in his, you can watch the highlight, takes the ball out of his glove as everybody is jumping around. They've won the championship, tucks it right into the back pocket, never gives it back. And there's a big, he ends up getting released by the team, big court battle over the ball. He eventually, I think, gave it back, but it was like immediate bad blood over that whole
thing.
And
I was going to remember the name, JR, only because it really on the weekend related to the whole Tom Brady situation with the ball.
Exactly.
And I just wondered at what point, and I was actually talking at home and saying, hey, I wonder if him giving the ball back, like who actually, if you're on the premise there and you've been given the ball, the football, but someone comes over and says, listen, we want the football back. Is that a true negotiation? And only to the point now, it went from, $250,000, $500,000, $750,000. I wonder if the fellow would have any legal battle. It'd be an interesting question for Eric Macromella as to whether, like, who technically on the premise owns the ball. And I'm sure for the Boston Red Sox, kind of the same thing, right? It's a real interesting interpretation, even in the case of Tom Brady. Like, does technically the Tampa Bay Buccaneers own the ball, or is it Tom Brady's ball?
Is that, it really? Or, go ahead.
I think it's once you hand it over, that's it. Yeah. It's possession.
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
And that was the important thing with Mankiewicz, putting it in his back pocket and owning it and not giving up his strength of negotiation, which the Byron fan absolutely did. I mean, come on. You can't be handing that away right off the get-go.
And they also mentioned on the telecast, guys, and I tried to look it up. The only thing I could find was a fine. If you throw a ball into the stands, you're fined $5,000 because they're afraid you'll hit somebody. Mm-hmm. But you have to pay for each ball that you give away, Jared, during a game.
Like, that's silly when you told me that. If that's
there is only a certain number of balls, and they're separate kicking balls.
Yeah.
That the NFL uses, but there's only a certain amount of balls, which is why I'm guessing that they want to sort of not have too many guys throw balls into the crowd.
And also, the reason that also came up, one of the big recent rain games, and it must have been the Colts game against, was it San Francisco that they had the big rainstorm?
Yes.
They mentioned, JR, and I can't remember if it was 12 or 16, but they were going to switch it out at halftime for a new set of balls because they were so wet, where normally, you know, that's what they would use.
That's the wet balls theory, as opposed to what Jeff Molson, Gary Bettman, cold balls theory.
Or deflated balls theory. Yeah.
Although I may need to recycle given the current state of the Montreal Canadiens and the draft in Montreal. I'm Shane Wright. I may be recycling. Don't have it?
What about just
cold balls theory?
I like it.
I have it as a wrench, but not on the hockey. Okay, it's cold balls theory.
You don't need that. Montreal's 1-6. If they continue to struggle and it looks like they might be in the draft lottery. Then I might need to recycle my cold balls.
I've already got a slogan for it, boys, and hear me out. What do you think of this one? Just when you think things are going wrong, they're actually going right.
That is a JR-ism right there.
Because that's kind of too long and kind of weak.
No, it's
so
not.
That's not up to my standards.
What's wrong is right.
That's better. That's better. Hey? You're trademarking that? You want to give that some thought?
I'm good. Oh.
What's wrong?
JR's going
right.
to steal it if you don't.
Wright with a premier schwa or whatever the hell they say.
See, I like your first one of what's going wrong is actually going right.
That's not a slogan.
It is
way
a slogan.
Too long.
Yeah. What's wrong is right isn't
marginally improved.
See, it has to be somewhat convoluted, so it's hard to recycle.
There already is a thing with Shane Wright. I can't remember. I read it already. Whatever the slogan is, you know, fall for pain or whatever, you know, whatever it is for him, it's already been written. It's already been trademarked. Timmer trying to start something new. Ain't working.
Timmer.
Hey, Timmer!
I hate that when people call me. One of my best friends calls me Sims, and I'm like, I don't know, man, where you got that from. But anyways, and also, I'm already hearing Trevor Timmons, if he's in charge of the draft, you know, doing the old premier étoire or whatever, the first pick.
Well, I guess you can't thank your fans because they're actually there.
But it's still the hospital of the city. Want to thank everybody at our draft party, Saint-Hubert.
Hang on now. Did Montreal, when they traded their first rounder, right?
Yeah.
Was that one of those optional first rounders? Because they had the first in Carolina, or was it the Carolina pick?
Well, no. Here's
Was it the top pick of whatever the two picks?
No.
It's the worst of the two.
Arizona gets the better pick, but it's top 10 protected.
That's right. Okay. I knew there was
so
some.
So this is also, if you're a Habs fan, you don't want to finish outside of the top 10, because you finish 11th, that's Arizona that's taking that pick, and then you've got...
Right.
Well, I shouldn't. Well, no, that doesn't.
Because
Carolina's pick is going to be way low. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
And you can't move up. They've changed the rules of the draft this year. You can't move up more than 10 spots.
Yeah.
So if you finish 11th, you have the 11th best odds of winning the draft lottery. I guess you could move up 10, then you'd be one. Sorry, if you have the 12th best odds, you can't move up to number one.
But imagine you're 11 and Arizona wins the first pick overall in Montreal. How would that be looking, JR?
Dear.
Right.
My theory that Ottawa last year drafted for the last time in the top 10. Of course, they had the 10th pick in Tyler Boucher.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily feeling like I'm as strong on that feeling. Like I'm feeling like this year potentially they could fall. No, there's room. I think this year we got some really, really bad hockey teams.
There's a battle, JR, in that
Buffalo, Arizona.
I was on the other day trying to go through
Buffalo's actually pretty good so far.
But. No, but they're not going to be. But I was going through the divisions, and we keep saying the Edmonton division's the worst. You also start scaling through the St. Louis division, which is trying to, you know, they're off to a hot start. Then I'm looking at Columbus, and you're looking at where a lot of franchises are at. I think the part for Ottawa, which is different now with 32 teams, to me, they're on the bottom 16 of the league, right? I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. The question is, that's a big difference between 17 and, you know, 25 to 30 or 32.
Chicago's dead last in the league right now.
Imagine a role, and of all places you're coming into, is that game in Toronto tonight?
No, it's in Chicago.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that, yeah.
Now, we'll see. Jonathan Toews didn't practice yesterday because he's in COVID. Patrick Kane has missed games because of COVID, as of four or five other players. So I don't know the status of whether any or all of those guys will miss or be playing tonight. But if they're all out and Toronto still finds a way to lose to Chicago, that is DEFCON 1900 on a scale of 1 to 10.
And I actually really like Sheldon Keefe. Wanted to be careful not to say Sheldon Kennedy. If I was Toronto right now, though, JR, I'd make a coaching change if I'm the manager. I don't
really?
Have... Oh, yeah, very much.
Now?
So. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
Seven games into the year?
Oh, yeah, very much. I with the way the season ended last year and for not having any other cards to play, I don't like kind of what's going on there. It's very casual. That's just my own feeling. And I do think that they're going to play that card. I'm not saying right away, but I think Dubas will be given that chance to bring in another coach. And
that arrow is in his quiver?
Yeah, I think so. Is that? Oh, that's a nice one there.
Thank you.
What does that mean? You're like drawing it.
That's where you store. That's where you store your arrows in your quiver.
Oh, it
so
is,
he's
eh?
Got that card to play as kind of a weak sauce cliche.
Yeah. Okay.
He's got that arrow in his quiver.
Oh.
You can use that one if you like, but
I
really,
thought it was just a backpack.
No.
Robin Hood said, hey, pass me my backpack.
I would be shocked if they moved quickly on Sheldon Keefe. Yeah. I really think that Kyle Dubas is a huge fan. Yeah. I don't think Toronto's as bad as they're showing right now. They're going to get better. Yeah. Now, will it reach a point where they're going to win multiple rounds of the playoffs? That's hard to look at the team right now and say that that's going to happen. I think, and who did we have on? Was it yesterday? It said those two guys are tied at the hip. I think I think they get this year.
MJ?
If it doesn't work, if it doesn't work this year, I think they're both gone.
Yeah, the only thing I would wonder from MLSE side is that if you're Brendan Shanahan and you haven't done anything either, as you start to feel vulnerable, would you tell him to play the coach's card? And to your point, I still think they're very much going to be in the top three with Tampa, Florida, and Toronto. The question really is to get after that. And I don't feel the same about Montreal. I know some people put that out there, JR. I don't see the mix and makeup of this team and with the losses that they've had and where they're at. And along with Jake Allen, I don't see that in Montreal. Now, are they going to be the worst team in the league? I'm not saying that, but I don't see this all of a sudden being a correction where Toronto will come back the other way.
The other part's interesting to me about Toronto, and again, we'll see how it all plays itself out. You mentioned Brendan Shanahan, who has been the architect of this he's been there the longest. Toronto Maple Leafs have not sold out a home game this year. They're averaging over 18,000, but they haven't sold out a home game, and they played either four or five games. I'm not saying the business is in trouble, but that is, and I know we're in unprecedented times with arenas just opening up fully and people still being reluctant to go out into public spaces in some cases, all of that stuff. But we're talking about arguably the largest fan base in the entire league, playing in a city of 4 million odd people more than 4 million within an hour's a car ride of the home rink. You know, the business side is that's a cash cow.
Yeah.
You're not selling out games right now, in part because your team isn't playing that well either.
Yeah.
I just wonder if, again, speculating, long time down the road, if I talk about Dubas and Keefe being tied together, is Shanahan part of that as well? And do all of them go at the end of this year?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility, Jaron. Also, I'm not going to say, but legitimately, you would look and never thunk, and especially when I was there 04 or 08, it was like a giveaway to get anybody to go to a Raptors game. The Raptors now are legitimate competition. Now, the nice part is you actually own them, but that part, then mix in an up-and-come Blue Jays team, you got some competition. So for sure, that would end up being an issue. And something you would discuss. And I also think to myself, imagine you're Lou Lamoriello, okay? A few years ago, JR.
I'm running the NHL. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, first of all,
Gary, do what I say.
You get a call from Brendan Shanahan, who you knew at 17 years old and drafted him in the NHL. And he says, I'm actually a president of a hockey team. I've never done anything in hockey, Lou. I've held some summits where I've took other people's ideas. But anyways, I want you to come and work for me. Okay. This is cool. I'm going to help you. I got the fella down the hall with the glasses on. I know he's actually old enough to drink. I'm going to bring him in. You're going to help him out. And then you know what I'm going to do when we get pretty good? I'm going to show you the door because you don't know what you're doing, but I'm going to elevate Mr. Smart Guy, Kyle Dubas. Well, okay, that's fine. Lou Lamoriello goes over. How have the Islanders done? Well, pretty good. You haven't won a darn thing. Like, think of how foolish that looks from NHL circles, JR, of you're going to bring in the next guy. And again, Kyle Dubas, smart guy. He hasn't done a good job there. Lou Lamoriello's gone over and just flourished. And don't kid yourself for a second. There's a reason why the other NHL general managers voted him 2 years in a row NHL general manager of the year, JR. And that is nothing more than a shot back to the Toronto Maple Leafs for trying to make him look bad. Because he didn't deserve to win it last year.
Yeah.
You know?
How would in your opinion, how would the Toronto Maple Leafs look different right now if Lou Lamoriello had remained as general manager as opposed to them morphing over to Kyle
Dubas? Well, and I hope I have my timeline right. What would be very different is there's not a chance he would give Marner that contract, not in a million years.
Not at that money.
Well,
he would have signed him, but
he would have signed
money.
Him. He was the one that was able to give him B-level bonuses. He would never have given Austin Matthews that contract as well. Now, John Tavares probably offered him out on the island, so right off the hop, it'd be those two things. Then you'd say to yourself, what's the trickle-down effect? Well, I wouldn't have had to, I assume, trade Kadri. Now, I can't predict it all, and people keep blaming Lou. Well, this is a mistake Lou made, and he made another mistake. You know, there's things. The drafting under Mark Hunter, which is Lou Lamoriello, was not very good. That's kind of caught up with him, JR. But if I just pulled a couple million off both those players, the trickle-down effect of everything they've had to do based on bad deals, and like I said, that right there would have been where it would go from there is impossible to say other than I just very much respect the hockey man that Lou Lamoriello is, and everyone laughed and said he was too old and didn't know what he was doing. Well, he seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, I will agree with the part of, and again, I've said this from the start, and I'll continue to say that, the contracts for Marner and for Matthews, the Matthews one, you can defend the money, but the term doesn't fit. You know, if you're giving him all the money, then you had to get more term from him. You had to buy more unrestricted. You gave him the second most money in the league or close to it at that point, and you bought 1 year of unrestricted free agency. Ridiculous. That's a bad contract.
He deserves Draisaitl money. He just deserves, McDavid close, but
you didn't use the you have leverage as a general manager. I know that everybody's getting their money out of their rookie deals right now, but you still have some leverage. Isn't quite what it used to be, but you still have some, and they didn't use any of it. That's the mistake. And as you said, think of the savings, the sway on that. Even if you give Matthews $11.5 million, but you've signed him for 7 or 8 years at that kind of money, and Mitch Marner gets closer to 8 or 9 as opposed to the 11, it's as little as 2, or as you said, if it's a shorter term deal for Matthews, as much as $4 or $5 million. Think of what you could have used that money on to supplement the roster that you have.
Yeah. And you
missed opportunity.
Yeah, and on Marner, hey, I like Marner a lot, but you put him into a situation where you cave to him, and at the same time, the Marner camp has put way too much pressure on the player, and he's not able to perform in what was a very lovable story, and a few years ago in the playoffs against Boston, kind of a gritty guy.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's completely shifted, you know, and it, to me, has also sucked some of the life out of his game.
It's almost like, he's still a terrific talent. I'm not taking anything away from Mitch Marner's talent, but it's getting to a point now where I think it's in the conversation, a fair conversation where you'd look at it and go, is Mitch Marner need to go play somewhere else to achieve, like is all the pressure on him from playing in Toronto and that contract and the criticism that he gets now, is that starting to cave in his confidence to the point where he's not going to reach the player that he is?
Oh, it already has, Jared, but that's also, I'll go back to the fault of the manager. He would be a player I would have actively tried to trade in the summer, and I'm not talking about dumping him out, but if Matthew Tkachuk, and I'm not saying Calgary would even do it, but that would, you look at your team and where you're going, that would have been so obvious at that point that was a move that you needed to make. And as I said, I'm not dumping the guy off. He's a hell of a hockey player. But you can tell he's only human, and this has had a real toll. And everybody I ever talk to always just says what a great kid he is. When you involved a father within a market like that in the contract negotiations and the level that went to, you were just asking for trouble.
Yeah. Did you ever end up watching the Amazon special?
No, I haven't. No.
Yeah,
no,
you should.
No.
You should. Yeah. You should. It was an eye-opener for me. Not in terms of, well, first of all, there are a lot more F-bombs than I never knew that Sheldon Keefe was dropping the F-bombs like he did. Felt like a little bit that, never been in an NHL dressing room before, but it just felt a little bit over the, it felt like too much all of the time. I was kind of surprised. I think he's a terrific coach, too, but behind-the-scenes stuff for me was very eye-opening on that.
Well, that was the quick point I was going to make, is I wonder if this documentary has backfired on him, and we can talk about it a little bit more later on, where the players who no doubt watched this documentary series, too, and watched how their coach acted behind the scenes.
Oh, it's a great point, Hammer.
He's a bit of a faker.
Yeah, it had a big effect on Bruce Boudreau when he did that years ago for Washington, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it became about him, point. And no, it can. I appreciate the F-bombs, but but I'm saying...
Mike Johnson said it himself. He's pretty quiet on the bench.
Yeah, when I watch him on the telecast, but to me, that can just get to a point where it gets a bit old, you know, and it's almost like, come on, man, you think you can figure out a little better choice of vocabulary than that.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, there's only so many times as a leader or a coach in this situation where you can call this the biggest period, the biggest game, the biggest series of our lives, and then you got to play that card again, and then again, and then again, you know? There's only so many times where, you know, the players underneath you are going to kind of roll their eyes and go, I thought last game, last period was the best, got to be the best 20 minutes of our lives. You know what I mean? So, anyway, that's the delicate balance of a coach. Leafs in Chicago tonight. That'll be an interesting game to keep your eye on.